But right now, it's time for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington. Historian extraordinaire joins us here now in the studio.
I could say the same about you as well.
Oh, you could, but yeah, exactly. I got to you first.
But you know, you're having this, it sounds so exciting to listen to music that reminds us of the cold. I think that's great. I remember one time going down to the beach and in a car that was not air conditioned, and it was about 100 degrees. And so I remember stopping with a car full of people. We were just like, let's go into a movie theater. We didn't care. We bought tickets. Then they handed us 3D glasses, and we sat there enraptured with Jaws in 3D. It was glorious.
Oh, nice.
Water everywhere. 3D. Yes. We didn't care. I just like, oh, this is wonderful.
I went to grad school at Rutgers in New Jersey, and we lived on campus for the first couple of years, and then I lived off campus for the last 5. But neither of the houses that I lived in was air conditioned. They were both very old houses. And, you know, most of the year that's fine. Yeah. But then in the summertime, it's 90 degrees nonstop. So we went to the movies all the time. The crap we saw. Absolutely ridiculous, horrible, bad movies. And
matter,
we loved
though.
every minute of it, right?
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Well, you know, I was reminded because when you said that, and I can't wait, and I'm sure the listeners can't wait to this extravaganza of cold weather hits, but there is one in 1942. Sold 25 million copies. That's when Bing Crosby records White Christmas.
Yes.
So don't know if that's in your lineup, but anyways.
How do you think they got into the Christmas spirit? Because you're recording this at the end of May. Like, it's probably hot outside.
I know,
like,
but it was in conjunction with a movie. Course,
well, right,
know.
Right.
So but, maybe that was, but I know. That
you still have to get into the spirit somehow. Like.
Dreamy.
All right, everyone, I'm here to record the song. Well, it's going to be about White Christmas. This is not Christmas. You sound nothing like Bing Crosby. I'm lowering my voice. What do you want?
Isn't that the movie Love Anyways? It has that scene where they're trying to record. Yes.
Love Actually. Yeah. Or Bill Nye's recording the Christmas song.
And you thought
song?
You were tuning into a whole section on history. We are. We're just more recent history. Well, there are some things that happened this week that are kind of noteworthy, let's talk about one that's kind of important. There are two dates on this North Carolina flag. One is May 20th, 1775, in honor of what was called the Mecklenburg Declaration.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a tribute to memory and not a lot of historicity. However, on May 31st, 1775, there really was resolutions adopted by citizens of Mecklenburg called the Mecklenburg Resolutions and this was after Lexington and Concord, where the residents of Mecklenburg felt like, oh, Mecklenburg County, let's make sure we declare independence from Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Let's really make a statement. And then that was followed the following April with the Halifax resolves, where North Carolina becomes the first state to actually instruct its delegates to the fledgling Continental Congress, go ahead and lobby the other states for independence. It's time. So those two dates are on the flag, but this one today, of May 31st, 1775, this week, is noteworthy because of its real history and
awesome.
Connection.
So what's the story behind the date on the flag then?
Well, the May 20th date is because someone published something they said. And especially after the Revolutionary War, as people were recollecting and said, you know, I think I remember something. And the Declaration of Independence, yeah, we were there first. And so they mm-hmm. came up with something that looked similar to it. And then there was talk about the original had been burned in a fire. And so there was a lot of controversy. But the folks of Charlotte will tell you that at that time they were convinced that this was the basis for the Declaration of Independence.
All right.
Jefferson would deny that.
Yes,
but,
well, he would.
Yeah. That's right. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, certainly the first that North Carolina has been a part of in terms of civil liberties and being there. They were the first colony, the first rising state to actually hold a provincial congress anywhere in among the 13. So it has a long history of being first, and those two dates on the flag really are a tribute to great history and also the power of memory and how that can also shift as we
for better or worse, right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Well, it's the same story with the 4th of July, right? John Adams is writing to Abigail saying, oh, July 2nd is going to be the date that's celebrated for many, many years forever, because that's the day that they actually voted to declare independence. And the 4th of July is a day that... What happened on the 4th of July?
They print
the Declaration.
The Dunlop version.
Yes.
And John Hancock's name is attached, and the secretary, and that's the one that George Washington reads 5 days later to troops. But it's not till August 2nd that everybody signs
that it's still
the
in the
copy.
Process of being
that's
signed.
That's the one that
you
see in the National Archives in Washington,
D.C. So July 4th is kind of a date that's kind of picked out of several dates that could possibly have been picked. And it's just, 4th of July.
4th of July, that's right. Well, there was some historicity to it. But again, that goes to looking into the deeper story of these things and go, wow. But it is true that when North Carolina fights that battle at Moores Creek Bridge, defeats the Scottish Loyalists in February of 1776, and then 2 months later when they meet in Halifax and adopt these resolves and with the instructions to the delegates, go ahead, lobby the other states for independence, first state to do that. Mm-hmm. Within 2 months of that is when we have the Declaration of Independence. So things kind of moved very swiftly once North Carolina kind of took the reins here.
I feel like there's a book to be written, if it hasn't been written already, about what the calendar of holidays could have looked like.
That's a great idea.
There's celebrating American independence on the 2nd of July, and Christmas is a date that, I mean, December 25th was almost, better chance than not that wasn't the actual day that Jesus was born. There's a history of the way that developed.
Right.
And what are some of the other days
the
that it could have possibly been?
The calendars we have in our own life when we're celebrating birthdays or anniversaries or what other get-togethers, those are personal calendars, and then there's societal calendars, and then these ones of great history that we like to celebrate. Speaking of birthdays, this is an important week because there was a little girl born in 1907 on May 27th, who grows up to become the woman we call Rachel Carson, who becomes a celebrated writer. She's thinking she's going to be an English major, changes to a biology major, doesn't know how she's going to match them up, and then begins writing. And, of course, Silent Spring is a result of that. And
let that be a lesson to all of you out there who are thinking about your majors. Like, at least minor in the humanities, or double major, something like
that's
that.
Right.
Because if you can write,
right.
you are one up on everyone else in
that's
your
right.
field when it comes to jobs and advancement and just communicating your ideas. And that includes a lot of English majors as well.
Yes, that's right. Well, and having something to write about.
Yes.
You know, that's what drove Rachel Carson to, first she was about the sea, and then she really honed in on what the pesticides were doing. It really launched, I think, the modern ecological movement that we are still grappling with the implications.
And it's not just the influence that she had on the modern environmentalist movement. It's the impact that book had in terms of helping the environment and probably saving a lot of lives, too.
Yes. And also, this week is when three interesting people have birthdays, too. One is, if you've ever seen one of those old Nichols with the Native American profile, that was actually based on a fellow, Chief John Bigtree, who was born in 1877, Native American, who was the model for the Indian Head Nickel. He was also an actor as well and appeared in 59 films, but that's really an interesting thing to say, that really was the basis of somebody who is living.
Interesting.
Another one is Martha Dandridge Washington. Of course, we know her as the First Lady, wife of President George Washington, but... A couple of little known facts. She's the only actual woman to appear on a U.S. banknote. The $1 silver certificate in 1886 and 1891. That was discontinued, but...
Okay. So we're not counting Susan B. Anthony or Sacagawea because they're on
Susan
coins,
B. Anthony's
right?
Susan B. Anthony's on coins, that's right. And hopefully we'll see
Harriet Tubman
coming up on the $20 bill eventually at some point. We don't know. Another one is...
Vote next November, y'all.
Yes. Charles Conrad Jr., born 1930, an American astronaut, third person to walk on the moon, whose personal motto was, if you can't be good, be colorful. You know, I'm not sure.
That's what I want. Okay, that's what I want in a skydiving instructor.
Yeah, that's right. Eric Charles, just kind of stick to when we get off of the spacecraft and we're landing, you know, nothing fancy.
I got the wackiest thing to say when we land. Yeah. Just push the button, Charles.
Well, you know, Mount Everest has been in the news this week. With all the, we've seen all the hikers lined up to summit and the backlog, it's hard to believe that it was only 1953 when Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay summited Everest for, well, what we know, the recorded first time.
That's the first time, which is, yeah.
You know, thinking, now we're into, like, lines of people to get up there.
And it's kind of fascinating, the history of mountain climbing as not a hobby. A vocation, I guess, because
well,
it's not.
It could be. Well, it could be a hobby. I mean, that somebody wants to do it, and they say, that's something that I really enjoy doing is climbing.
But just the idea that I am going to scale to the highest point.
Right.
Like, that's not something that you immediately... I mean, that's not something that just naturally occurs to people, and it takes until fairly recently for...
But, you know, if people are yearning and say, oh, if only I could do that, well, I'm going to give you an easy option, an Orange County actual connection, and that is the Okanichi Mountain.
Okay.
State park area that's managed by the Eno River Park. And that's the highest natural point between here and the coast. It's a half a billion year old mountain. It's in the same range as the Appalachians. So if you really want to say, I've climbed a mountain, or where is one around here, you don't have to go to Western North Carolina. You don't have to go to the Appalachians. You can go actually to Hillsboro. And there's a nice little ranger access road that goes up, and then this overlook where you can see for hundreds of miles. It's really quite stunning. And then little trails that go all the way around it. It has the world's one of the world's largest deposits of pyrophyllite, which is a soft, chalky material that's heat-resistant, used in both pottery and maybe the space program, but NASA's not talking about that, so we're not quite sure.
They're covering it up, you know.
We don't know. Oh, and I've got to mention, this is the week of dedications. 1859, Big Ben rings for the first time in London. May 31st. May 30th, 1922 is when the Lincoln Memorial was dedicated.
Yes.
Which is kind of, and then of course, 1935 is when Duke Chapel was dedicated. Now, just to kind of note for folks, 1930 is when it actually begins construction. Mm-hmm. 1932 is when it's the first commencement is held. Now, it's not even finished. Not all the windows are even. It takes another 3 years until 1935 when the chapel is finally dedicated.
How finished was the chapel when they held commencement in it?
It wasn't entirely.
I have a feeling that commencement was supposed to be on the quad, and then a very, very sudden storm came. And it's like, get into that building over there.
Right. Yeah. Well,
it's not done yet.
Yeah.
Curse, it's not done yet.
Well,
there's a roof.
Push aside the scaffolding. You know, what does it matter? That's it. I don't have all that, and I'm hoping to track down a little bit more information about that. But this Sunday, June 2nd, marks the 84th anniversary of when the chapel was dedicated. And that's, you know, you think of the impact it's had both in the lives of people and music and the campus itself. It's remarkable because somebody had the vision to say, I think I'd like an English kind of cathedral there.
Yes.
The only reason it's not called a cathedral is because the bishop doesn't have their office there. Otherwise, you think a chapel, where's the big church?
Yeah, right.
You look at that.
And this is just the church on the side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's really impressive. So,
speaking with Scott Washington, we've got time for two more, but I'm going to claim one because tomorrow, May 31st, is the 200th birthday of my favorite poet, Walt Whitman.
Walt Whitman, yes. Leaves of Grass, yes.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. How?
Yeah.
And if nobody has read these poems, please go online. You can look them up. The Gutenberg Project has it for free. I mean,
also,
it's stirring. It's one of the great American poets. that speaks to our times mm-hmm. in a contemporary way.
It really does, too. Yeah, and innovative when it comes to poetry. Like, yes. Free verse gets popularized by Whitman and Leaves of Grass and things like that.
And he does all these different revisions, too. He self-publishes, and then he revises it.
Yeah.
So you have to say, which version of Leaves of Grass?
Oh, I've got the answer to that actually. This is my nerdiness on Leaves of Grass. I'm going to tell everyone.
Poets are always like, oh, yes, revise, that's a great idea.
Yeah. To forget the, like, you go to the bookstore and you look for Leaves of Grass and you get that big, thick book. That is the 1891 version known as the Deathbed version, which was published, which was finished as he was getting close to the very end of his life. And I think published shortly after he died. That's the crap version. Ignore that version. Go all the way back to the early stuff. And you can find this online, and there are copies around. The 1855 version, the first one he published, 12 poems, 80 pages, very short, very simple, and it's fantastic. He revised it again the next year, and then there's an 1860 version, and if you ask Whitman scholars, of which there is a surprisingly high number, many of them will tell you that the 1860 version is the best, but there's an actual debate over 1855 versus 56 versus 60. No Whitman scholar says the 1891 version is the best.
Because
Walt Whitman writes this thing in 1855, and then you're right. He doesn't, like, you think, published Leaves of Grass, I'm to move on to my next project. Oh no, he just revises and revises and revises and adds and adds and adds and makes it bigger and bigger and bigger, and just the quality starts to suffer as he makes it bigger and bigger and bigger. He is the George Lucas of the 19th
century. Thank you. I was just going to mention that about Star Wars. Yes. And it's like so hard to find the original copy. No. He pulled them all out, and it's really hard unless you
find the theatrical edition.
That's right.
Right.
But the theatrical is what they made cuts, but it was much better. And then, but wait, I don't want to leave this scene.
This
and
is true.
Like, oh, yeah. Jabba the 100%. Hutt is suddenly an Italian mobster. And that they said, we're not going to do that. Well, we'll try to make him smaller to fit. And, it was just ridiculous. But I'm glad to know the 1855 is the recommended
1855.
Version. You know, if people are saying, I was wondering today which version I should go for, this is the place to come to.
This is my opinion. Ask other Whitman people.
History.
They might tell you a different thing.
That's great. I'm going to ignore the other versions.
Good. All right. One more. What do we got?
All right. Here's one that's kind of interesting. 1754, we mentioned, Mrs. Washington. 1754, the French and Indian War starts because there is a young soldier sent out to settle things in the middle of the country and begins a war. At least on this continent, we call the French and Indian War. It's a 7-year war. It's really one of the big worldwide wars. It takes place in Europe and here in the Americas. And that person was none other than George Washington.
Back in the news again.
So I'm glad he kind of cleaned up things some years later. That's really good. And also in 585 BC is when there was a battle between Medes
the Lydians, right?
Lydians. And we can date it, and we know it, because sometimes all these ancient things, how could they know? It was because of solar eclipse, and that scientists could go back and say, historically, we know.
So this is exactly
happened.
When that
that's
date happened.
That's when they said, not a good day to go to war. Huh. Look at that. The sun.
That's the first thing that happened that we know the date for, right?
Well, I think so. That may be up for debate.
For now, it's
for
the
now.
First thing that happened that we know the date
for. Next week and
stay
maybe we
tuned for future
that's
things.
Right.
Awesome. And that is History Matters. As always, Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.